Welcome to Bankless Africa, a podcast by Africans on building and innovating Web3 into a new frontier for the people of Africa. I'm your host, Miss Purple, and each episode, I get together with some wonderful people across the continent and the diaspora to talk, ideate, and dream about the bright future of our people. Stay tuned for another exciting episode.
So today's conversation is one that I think a lot of us need to have. If anything, you know, I hope we can all draw from this conversation just the understanding that nobody could have seen this coming. And as detrimental as it is, none of us saw it coming. You know, even big time players in the space did not see it coming. But if anything, it shows us that we need to be having more conversations that we're perhaps not having. I hope that it encourages us to diversify the kinds of convos and the kinds of questions that we ask people, especially when it has our money and entire savings involved. So with that, I am proud to introduce you all to a friend of Bankless Africa who's going to just, you know, speak about his personal experience working as an FTX ambassador and FTT DAO Ghana lead. And yeah, just, you know, from a user perspective, but also from somebody who has a relationship with FTX, what it has been like to see everything unfold. So to start off with, how are you doing today, Farouk?
Hey, hi, I'm doing well. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm great. Thank you so much for coming on. I know we had a bit of a back and forth trying to get it secured and locked in, but we're finally here, which is what matters. So before we get into the actual conversation, do you give us, you know, an intro on you, just a story about how, you know, your career was going and how you ended up getting involved with working in the crypto scene, but specifically with FTX?
It's an interesting story, right? Because I was introduced to this space through a college buddy. We went to college together and he, about 2016, 2017, he reached out and said, "Hey, I'm doing this new thing called Bitcoin mining. Will you be interested?" And I'm like, "What is that?" And, you know, like everything, you're curious, you're naive, you have no idea, right? So he walked me through the basic and we did a couple of investment around getting some, it was T9 then, miners to Ghana, set up his house and he started mining. Unfortunately for that project, his house got burned down because of wiring situation. And we moved on to investing into a pool of funds with a couple of friends. We did that for a few years. And when after about 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, we split the funds. And I realized, why am I just being on the passive side of this thing? It looks interesting. And beyond just investing, over that period, I was also just reading, just observing, just going to his house. You see his setup, you see he has multiple streams, like a Wall Street guy, right? And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I want to learn, I want to understand. So I was just reading, just checking it out. So when we got to the point where the funds had to be split, I'm like, okay, I think it's time now I take some active role in this space and understand for myself. So I started the trading side or just holding it as a strategy. About late last year, he was approached, this same body of mine was approached by the African team of FTX to fill in the position of country manager for Ghana. And he's like, "Oh, this is interesting, but it's not a priority for me. And I'm not very good at this thing. I know somebody who is very good at this thing." And he recommended they speak to me. I spoke to them, they liked my ideas, and they hired me at this a couple of months with them. I think it was just too early actually for the Ghanaian market. There were a couple of metrics that they require and a couple of business decisions that was that needed to be addressed, and the role was crashed. So then they let me go. But the African team then recommended me to MJ, who is the founder of FTT DAO, when the DAO was founded and he was trying to create the community. Like, this was very early, right? So That's how I also then covered Ghana as well as the country lead for FTTDAO. And ever since I've been investing, I've also been training people. I've created a company around emerging technology that's like blockchain, smart contract, or Web3. So I have a media company that help marketing, do research, help you build strategy around entering into the African market, help you design your products. So yeah, so now it's more like I don't like to call myself a trader because I don't do a lot of trading. I usually hodl a lot. So I do a lot of that, but I also have consulting side also on emerging technology as well. So basically that's where I am right now.
So what do you, as the FTTDAO Ghana lead, what do you say to those people? You know, with everything that has happened with the FTT token itself literally tanking due to the insolvency of FTX and Alameda, what do you say to all those people? How do you respond to them? How do you explain to them what exactly is going on and why the whole thing is essentially dying, if not already dead?
That's a good question, because honestly, you can't give facts right now on this matter because the information is not really, like, we are all figuring this out. So what I've done so far is just to share what I know, right? Give the details as I see it, as I get them with the community. It's interesting because the community now is the one looking after me. It's such an interesting thing because they are the one checking up on me. Hey, are you okay, bro? Like, people texting me from this community because they understand how passionate we were about this educational side, right? How passionate we were about impact. And as much as FTTDAO has lost all its funds, the founder has lost all his savings on this FTX situation. So it's not just the reputational damage. We have all lost a lot of our savings on this as well. But we hold ourselves accountable to the integrity part where we have to give the information as it is and not sugarcoat it and be honest with the community. So we just tell them this is the situation and we share the links, as Tutu has been very helpful in this space actually in digging up information. We just reshare those links in a group, and we had a call with the BFF on Monday, the global call, where the FTTDAO was dissolved because as our current case, it makes no sense going forward. But even the Ghana team, and we tell them this is the situation. We can survive. We don't have funds. We don't have a role model that we're building the business, the DAO around. So yeah, we just tell them the truth as we see it and as we get it.
I think it's important that you just touched on something there, that you can only share the truth as you see it, which means you don't even have access to the truth itself, you know? So investors and consumers and even employees alike are finding things out on Twitter. And that's mind-blowing to me, because in something this drastic, you would think that one's main concern should be to ensure that the people whose lives literally depend on you, outside of just, you know, being main character in the whole debacle, you would ensure that those people are taken care of. But half of those people had no idea what was going on. They had to literally sit on Twitter to be able to understand the gist of what went down, what has transpired, and what's next. And even now, you know, it's a developing story. So there's still new things that keep coming out of the woodworks, and we discover things and we hear perspectives of people who worked inside at different, you know, tiers and different levels. And none of them seem to have, or none of them, rather, had some kind of a, you know, an understanding or an aerial viewpoint of knowing exactly how things were going. I mean, I guess in retrospect, some of the things that were going on in there make sense now. But beforehand, you didn't know much. And that, you know, it's worrying, because then it begs the question, how transparent is their crypto space? Can people say that the crypto space in itself is not transparent? Or is that just an FTX problem? Is it an SBF problem? Like, where is the actual breaking point here? What's the core issue to getting that kind of absolute transparency? In your opinion, what would you say is the cause of issues like this where you have to find out with everybody else on Twitter? Is it SBF or FDA with the whole space?
That's interesting, right? Because over the last few days, the word transparent has been used a lot in terms of addressing the situation. And I will say it's an industry's situation, right? It's not an FBL or FTX situation. It's every industry have some sort of a cloak and dagger that they use to shield themselves in terms of under the impression of we are protecting customers, or this is trade secrets, right? And the crypto space is no different. If you look at the top three exchanges that is currently there, beyond the thing we see on Twitter, what do people know? Nothing. No one knows the banks they are using. No one knows where their holdings are. We see wallets here. We see this here. Unless people fold their hands, like we saw with the other exchange. Like people go and say, hey, this is moving from the exchange. Why is this happening? Or say, why is withdrawal not coming through? Then before they will start to come and give us some strange shot or come and defend themselves. But are they operating with the standpoint of saying from day one, it doesn't matter who's asking, this is where everything is? And it's interesting as well, if you look at it, just going back to FTX, FTX had on their website a link that was showing you valid trades across the industry. And on that link, you could see the different exchanges. And then they were pointing, I remember this very well, they were pointing out saying, oh, this is actually not a genuine number. These are genuine numbers. It was on the website. You could literally see all the trades on FTX and other exchanges. So even they were claiming transparency on volumes, etc. Right? And looking back now and knowing where we are, we also saw that was limited. So how do you even guarantee the level of transparency you are seeing is a full transparency? That is something we are yet to see. That's something we are yet to discover. And as the space grow, we're going to keep experiencing such a half-sold narrative of I'm being transparent. That's the amazing part of the blockchain. The blockchain was built from day one with clear transparency in respect of whoever is using it, right? Anybody can go online and track a transaction. Can we do that with the current situation with different exchanges? I don't think so, right? So my perspective is whoever is preaching transparency now is half sold. It's not full transparency. They are not doing it as their one business model. It's more of a reaction towards certain things, right? But we'll see if that will get better over the next few years. That's something I'm just monitoring right now.
I think, you know, like you said, trade secrets are a part of, you know, company-run industries. However, I think that this is clear evidence then that exchanges are very much Web2 interpretations of crypto, which does not inherently solve the core issues for which crypto was then intended to solve, which then means that exchanges, they should be a bridge more than anything else, you know, a bridge from Web2 into the crypto scene. So you start off with an exchange and you get to try to understand how things possibly are supposed to function, but then you move off of that. So an exchange should not be where somebody kind of cashes in all their cards and you just kind of bank everything of yours in there, because then, you know, it's very much Web2, like you said, because there's those secrets. But when it's more decentralized, the whole idea is that there is no space for those kinds of secrets, because everything should be transparent. Everything should be on chain, where the code is literally law, and you can't have, you know, secret back doors where you can move billions of dollars without anybody batting an eyelash. So, I think that's the core takeaway from this entire situation, that exchanges, no matter how good they may be, even if what they're doing, you know, in their back end, they have none of the bad vibes and negative stuff and whatnot, it doesn't mean that they are the be all and end all. And that's where we should, you know, just park our tushes and just sit and decide that we're going to build off of that. We should be intentional about the fact that exchanges are merely there to help bridge us into, you know, the larger crypto scene, especially because that's the easiest place for people to convert their fiat into crypto and then into whatever other currency it is they want, and then move that to a more decentralized wallet or exchange or other. But anyway, as you know, I think any person who's African has always noticed that we are always catching strays when it comes to issues of this magnitude, or perhaps issues that are relating to money, financial, anything. We're always catching something that we never intended to be a part of, not in that way, at least. Why do you think this is the case? Even after thousands and so many years, we're still the butt of the joke. You know, we can sit here and do whatever it is that we want that may be positive, but one wrong move from a specific party and, you know, we kind of caught in the crossfire.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, right? I will look at it differently, honestly, because the blockchain technology have changed that narrative, right? If you look at Nigeria, let's take the DAO, for example, right? Usually DAOs are top-down. When I say top-down, it's like the Western countries or Asian countries are bringing their ideas down to Africa. FTT DAO was reversed. FTT DAO was built from Africa to the rest of the world. The most events were hired in Africa. The larger volume of team was in Africa, right? Most of the policy, the direction of the DAO was created from Africa, right? You are right. We are always catching strays, but in this scenario, it's reversed. Crypto has changed that for Africans, right? We found ourselves investing more across the blockchain. We found ourselves being empowered with blockchain technology and crypto assets now we are using across different countries in Africa. If you look a few years back, one of the things I would like to point out is that the challenge with the crypto space, like everything else in Africa, it's not just crypto that is being introduced to Africans or the blockchain technology. It's a whole mindset shift that it's okay to start investing in digital assets. It's okay to start investing in things that you don't physically see or office that you cannot physically go to. And that change is the change that is really hitting a lot of Africans. Like, we have never had a chance to lose our money this fast and this vast across Africa before, because we don't have a large stock market, right? We don't have a large trading funds management across Africa. Or if you look at the investment side, we are now seeing a few unicorns in Africa, right? The Western world have had the internet bubble. They have had a great recession. They have had multiple touches of losing large volume of funds from the economy, you know, single period of time. And a lot of people got rich and a lot of people got poor. Africa is now experiencing that phase. And like everything, the same situation with how the telephone, the landline, the cell phone, we did a jump, right? Same thing. We did not really play with the stock market like the way the West did. We did not really play with the ETFs like the way the West did. But we jumped and started playing with crypto really early on in the space, and we embraced crypto and we started investing in crypto, started using it our day-to-day life. Like over the last few days with this whole FTX situation, I'm dealing with a lot of older generations who I had personally encouraged, and they had no business dealing with crypto, but the current city, the inflation that is going on across Africa, especially in Ghana, I'm like, why don't you put money in stablecoins? What is stablecoin? They have no idea, but hey, it can protect your money, which looking at it now was wrong. But these people put a huge amount of money. They jump. These are people who the most they have done on the stock market is buy T-bills, right? But now they are playing with digital assets. And that's the jump that in Africa we need to appreciate. As much as things like FTX and Luna is hitting us hard, yeah, it's the first time we are seeing such a large money of people live in the economy, and a lot of people are getting poor in a day. But we are understanding that we are not limited to our geographical location anymore, right? So for me, it's a mixed feeling, right? It's not a good time. I'm sad that I have a lot of friends who have lost their phones, a lot of people who are really down, a lot of mentees and a lot of peers that I've seen really being hit by this really high, including myself. But I'm also like, wow, now I can buy Tesla stock through tokenized stock that FTX was introducing, right? Now I could say, hey, you cannot buy direct stock from Ghana easily, but on the FTX platform, you could do that. That just changed the perspective for me. I don't need to always put my money in the Ghana bank's account, right? I need to say, okay, cool. Can I live in the country but operate crypto? And if I need it, I transfer it to fiat. That's a mindset shift, right? As an African, everybody tell you you should keep it under your mattress. And it's not literally keep it under your mattress. It's like put it somewhere you can see or you can easily reach, right? So are we always catching stray? Yeah. Is it the situation? Yeah. I don't think so, actually. I think it's a new space. We are doing a huge leap because we are skipping a lot of fundamentals that allow the Western world to really understand post safety net in place. Like we hear the US is talking about regulation, crypto space, etc. in Ghana. If you ask them, it's like, we consider it. We are not talking about it yet because they are still figuring out the stock market. We are looking at Nigeria's stock market is growing, so Africa's stock market is growing, and now they are linking to the global stock market. That space alone have not reached its full potential, and then we have the crypto space going on simultaneously. In the part of the world, we are risk takers in Africa. We are such amazing people who... And the young, our generation is such amazing. Like, we are on a Bankless Africa DAO podcast, right? We are people who are embracing technology at the rate that our ancestors could have ever imagined, right? The leap between our parents and us in terms of growth and understanding is fast compared to their leap between them and their parents, right? So all this dynamic, it's really moving fast for us in Africa, and it's different than 10, 20 years ago. It's totally different, and it's even encouraging us as Africans to take on more, to understand we belong in this world. We are part of the ecosystem. Instead of us always being at the back end and only when they want to test their vaccine or they want to do some quote-unquote conspiracy, then they come to Africa. No. We are at the front end. We're helping to shape the industry. And I love that part. And I appreciate that part because we are getting our own voice. We are fine-tuning these spaces to meet our requirement, not the other way around, right?
I love that you mentioned, you know, that thing about we're not even, we don't even have any experience with stock markets. We're still trying to figure all of that stuff out. And I remember very clearly the first time when I came across FTX, I knew they had crypto stuff. Of course, that's one of the main reasons why I came across them. But then I discovered that, like you said, I could then invest in other stocks that I could never be able to access before, because half the other, you know, platforms are not available or accessible specifically to me being in Lesotho, but mostly to other African countries. I try to get onto Robinhood, but it doesn't allow me. There's a ton of them. There are tons of them. Every single day you can sit on the internet, and I can promise you, you'll probably find 10 in about 10 minutes. But most of them don't allow Africans to get involved. And I know that certain African countries are even more discriminated against than others because people feel like they are a scammy country. But ironically speaking, I feel like the simple difference is that... maybe other countries just know how to hide their scams, because I refuse to believe that we are the biggest scammers, because this, what just transpired right now, is evidence that there are people out there who have the gall to work around with people's money and essentially ruin their entire lives. And that is extremely concerning. I guess then my question, more, this is more to the listener, to say, what is preventing us as Africans whether we're on the continent or in the diaspora, what's preventing us from, you know, creating that kind of platform for ourselves, one that will not be taken away from us if the person who put that together decides to do something sinister. Human beings will forever do things that are sinister. So it's not guaranteed that just because it's created by one of our own, it will not, you know, harm us or damage us. But I think that's, you know, one step in the right direction in terms of, you know, just at least considering and looking into creating platforms for ourselves that can help us to participate within the stock market, both globally, but also in the African landscape. So thank you so much for bringing that up, because that's very, very important for our growth as a whole continent and our growth towards, you know, financial freedom. Now, you touched on something a bit earlier that African politicians don't, a lot of them, they don't know much, you know, then they're already skeptical about the whole situation. So what do we tell them now? Okay, how do we plead our case as a continent when we continue to be so drastically affected by what others are doing? How do we operate and function in this space in a way that doesn't alienate our needs, but actually caters to us and doesn't harm us and does more good than anything else? What hope is there that we can continue to build in a space like this one, where we continue to be collateral damage, whether or not we want to be, because the space is now so global, it's an even bigger risk? How do we convince them that this is still a good idea, that we still want to explore this from a continental perspective?
Well, I would say this, right? I do not want the politician in this space, to be honest. This is my view. If they want to come in a space, they should focus on the gatekeepers. What do that mean, right? I mean by the exchanges, the access point into crypto space. I don't want you to come and tell me you want to regulate crypto. I'll tell you no. That's, first of all, that's not what the blockchain is built for, right? However, like, we have the mobile network who's giving us access to the internet. Don't tell me you want to regulate the internet. Regulate the points of entrance, which are the exchanges, the market makers. Put some sort of a policy that says, hey, this is how customer details are protected. This is how customer funds should be protected. These are the counter insurance that we should see that is backing your company. These are the amount of audit that you should allow in terms of transparency again. Because first of all, the blockchain technology is based on transparency. African regulators want to come in, they create more clock and dagger. They do not come in to open up a space. They come in to shield the public, and then they shield the business. And that blind spot is where we get hurt the most, right? You mentioned something about is if it's being built by an African, would that make us even more safer? But let's take, for example, everything that has gone wrong in Africa, an African was involved from early on in our history, right, to our politicians, to leaders selling our lands or our natural resources, right, or people signing contracts that did not benefit the rest of the public, right? Africans were there. What's the difference if they own it 100%? For me, it makes no difference, because first of all, none of them have shown that they have integrity from day one. They are always shielding themselves with, quote unquote, I'm a politician or I'm a leader. I'm doing it for your best interest.
Are you then saying that, you know, some of these solutions, it should be okay for us to, you know, give them out to non-Africans, people who are not, who do not identify as Africans? Is that the core of it then?
No, I'm saying they should not limit themselves to Africa. Engage on the global level. Engage and say, I'm not designing policy for African, but let's engage these teams or this community and let's design policy for the world. Remember, Africans are every part of this world. We are not limited to Africa. Do you understand my point here? Don't come and tell me, oh, I'm designing policy for Africa. When the U.S. is designing policy, they don't design only policy for the U.S. They have their global strategy. Africans should start thinking about global strategy as well, not just African strategy. And they high honor that impression that we are doing it for Africans, and they save all their money in the Western world. I don't want that story anymore. tell me, how can this plan work on a global scale? At the end of the day, it's humanity that matters. At the end of the day, it's poverty level is everywhere. If I can't eat today, hunger doesn't have nationality. Right. If I'm broke, there's no difference whether you're in the US or you're in Africa. You are broke. End of story. If you are being defrauded, now if I lose 200x and someone loses 300x, is it not loss? It doesn't matter whether they are white or black. We both have lost something. If you want to design policy, go engage on a global level where the policy cut across the whole world. The reason is this. That way, your bullshit will not work on the Africans because you can be held accountable in Africa. We have seen it. At the global level, we have some sort of a guidance there who will check you, right? That's the perspective I would like for African leaders to come from.
I understand. I think it's a very valid point. You know, it begs the question on, you know, why do we have such a serious tribalism amongst ourselves? Because you're right. Most people will say, I want to create this for Ghana or Nigeria or Kenya. And it's like, yeah, but Africa is Africa. You know, we're all Africans and we all deserve the same solutions because a lot of us have the same problems. So why do we focus merely on giving solutions to our own individual countries versus the not only the entire continent, but then expanding that to the entire globe? So I think we also have internal, you know, workings that we need to understand why we operate the way we do, because we've already alienated ourselves or we've allowed ourselves to be alienated amongst each other, which affects, you know, how we do business and all of that with our fellow man, etc. But I think I was, you know, of course, I was asking mainly on the side of countries either deeming crypto to be illegal or legal or anything of the sort. But that's a very valid point. My question then is, so what do you and your mentees and everybody else who was involved with FTX specifically in Africa, what do we do? You know, we've lost all our savings that took a long time for us to put together. What happens now? Is there a way for us to reaccumulate those funds? Or is there something that we can do to ensure that this doesn't happen to us specifically again? But also, how do we move forward, realistically speaking?
I will say this, right? I'll go at this from two points. One is this. In Ghana, we have had a situation where local Ponzi schemes, guys like 9-1, etc., like they are always popping up every part of the year, right? People lose their money. What happened? These cases has been caught for years. People never get the money back. Why? Because the providers of these schemes are working in line with politicians, and the politicians are the same benchmark provided to themselves, right? Now, take the FTX situation. I will say the Ghanaian government should rather go and talk to the global team in Bahamas who are doing the review of the book and start to engage them. Say, how are my citizens being affected? Every African country should start to go and collaborate with the global team. Instead of them saying it's Ghana, Ghana, FTX officially is not in Ghana, Binance officially is not in Ghana. So if you go, this is a virtual world we are going in now. That geolocation thing does not work. We need to understand a couple of things here. That silos of countries, like we are in West Africa, you can't even go to a neighboring country easily. It will not survive in the next few years. And we need to embrace that. That's also a freedom for Africans. I cannot even easily take a plane and fly to Eastern Africa. We are getting a whole lot of processes done, right? But if you go to Europe, you can drive between countries because they understand that geolocation does not matter. And the reason these people are doing this is because that's how they create control for themselves. And with the blockchain technology, we are eliminating that control from them. And they either have to adapt or we will get hit a lot. Don't get me wrong. This is a big but the banking system is going to lose a lot of money. The economy locally is going to lose a lot of money, right? We provide one of our service, our company provides to pay for trade facilitation in Asia. the banks will take you X amount of days. With us, it's instant. If you give us fiat, we send crypto. They give fiat to your supplier in Asia. And your product is done. Do you see how much money is leaving the traditional banking system? And the government needs to understand their idea of local governance will not survive. If they want to make an impact, take example this FTX situation. If I'm in a situation like this, I'm no politician, but I would say, why are they not talking to the regulators now who are reviewing the book of the FTX? Because this is not a country limit thing. This is a global thing. You can't put a regulation in Ghana and expect FTX who's in the Bahamas to abide by that. It won't work. You would rather work with the Bahamian government to incorporate your regulation in their policy because that's where FTX is. And that removes your geolocation limit. And as the Africans who has been affected by this, how do we go forward? Honestly, the space is too young. We are still finding out best practices. Every milestone we hit becomes a new bullet point. We say, watch out for those things, right? Every time we see a crash like this, it became a new benchmark to say, these are the red flags we have to watch out for. We have been living with traditional banking system for what, 100 plus years? How many times we have seen them influence elections? We have seen the local financial system influence terrorism attack, right? We have seen corruption, facilitating corruption. We have seen our politicians using this same banking system that they are telling us is secure than crypto to hide money overseas and shield themselves from prosecution and shield themselves from being accountable to their citizens. Blockchain take away that. How many times have we seen them use the electoral process that they claim is all reliable than the blockchain to corrupt elections? So going back is not the solution for me. Isolating ourselves is not the solution. We should rather start to think global impact because your citizens are no longer in just your geographical location anymore. And they are being affected every part of this world. You can't tell me Ghanaian passport holders are not affected in the US or the Bahamas. They are there. How do you protect those people? That's a question we all need to ask these politicians to think about.
Let me ask you this then, very simple question. Are you going to stick around in the crypto space?
Of course, yeah. Of course. The crypto is bigger than FTX. FTX is not a crypto. FTX is just on the gateway to the platform. It's way bigger than FTX. It's way bigger than any other exchange. The blockchain technology, we have not scratched the surface of this technology yet. Now it's only crypto assets we are interacting with. Now the first product we are interacting with DeFi, which is the financial side, right? Now the first product we are interacting with on the blockchain is the Web3. These are first mover products. There's whole lot of, it's like every technology that was created in this world. When the internet started, it was peer-to-peer message sharing, right? It was sharing messages between scientists. Look at where we are now. We are thinking of Web 3.0. The blockchain is bigger than FTX, man. It's way bigger than anybody who is providing gateway service to the technology.
I love that you said that. I love that you said that so much, you know, and what you said earlier, there's a saying that I've heard often that the first one out the gate always gets bloodied. So we will be the ones who figure out, you know, where the things go wrong. And then that will, you know, inevitably pave the way for people who come after us. But it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt for a while and it won't be fun for us. But, you know, we know that at the end of the day, it's for a greater purpose that goes beyond just us and our pockets and our wallets. And, you know, for people who may be wondering or trying to figure out why would one use exchanges with their entire life savings to begin with, just a bit of perspective, using an exchange and specifically using crypto is much more efficient for a lot of people than using a traditional banking system. Because like you said, Farouk, you can be able to, you know, send crypto to somebody in, say, China or Dubai or here in Lesotho in, you know, the span of a few minutes or less than a minute, actually, oftentimes, and they can get the funds and get the job done, you know, because also off-ramping has also been implemented in many of these exchanges in a very efficient way that is a lot more efficient than using a bank. Because if I were to use a bank to even send money to South Africa, that often takes 2 working days. And it takes me less than a few minutes for me to off-ramp, you know, funds from crypto exchanges, mostly in general, at least. So for a lot of people, there's that efficiency that they've never been able to access in their traditional banking systems, but also the freedom to know that they can use their funds for whatever they want without being questioned, without being, you know, pinned down to understand where are you taking this money, why is it going to this different country? Because if you get money from a certain country, they flag you. Why is this person from this country sending you money? But in crypto, nobody cares what country the money comes from, as long as you got the money that you're supposed to get. You know what I mean? So for a lot of people, it was a life-changing moment, or it continues to be a life-changing moment. This entire crypto system, like you said, Farouk, it's a whole new way of life for many of us. It's a revolution of sorts, and it's a new experiment that we are proud to be a part of, and situations like what FTX has done or what FTX has made people go through is just a reminder that we truly need something that is decentralized. We need something that does not rest on, you know, the whim of one specific individual or a few select group of individuals who can then make decisions on our lives and what happens with our funds from then on, because that's what we've been dealing with for so many years and that's what we're trying to get away from. So thank you. Thank you for that was a beautiful perspective, I think, to go from. In official closing, I like to ask a question of our guests to say, how would you describe, you know, your feeling about the space going forward? Of course, taking into context the whole situation that has unfolded and continues to unfold currently, how would you describe the entire crypto Web3 space in 3 words?
I'm excited. I am really excited about this space, truly. And I'm just curious to see where we lead with all these new changes and new introductions.
No, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for giving the time to speak with us today. I know it's for other people, they may not be able to have the kind of optimism that you have, but I think it's so refreshing to hear from another young person that we're not giving up. You know, this was just another one of those tragic, horrifying hiccups, but we're not going to give up on the space simply because of, you know, a few people's greed and, you know, absolute mistreatment or ill treatment of human beings and their trust and their funds as well. I think it's more evidence of that than anything else about the space as a whole. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And as Africans, I think we need to do a lot more work as well from our end versus just waiting for people to give us the solutions, because that is not going to happen. It is on us to find our solutions as a people, but also to find solutions for the globe as well. You know, we can no longer sit on the sidelines to just consume what we consume and then be done with that. There needs to be more coming out of us than has ever been ever before. So with that, thank you everyone for listening to this special segment. And thank you again, Farouk. And thank you to every single person who continues to support the podcast. Remember, you can always leave a review or a rating if you'd like to speak to us about getting onto the show, any kind of sponsorship or work-related deals. Be sure to send us an email or send us a DM on our Twitter pages as well. And with that, thank you so much and have a great day. Thank you for spending another episode with me. Just a reminder that none of what we share is financial advice, only opinions of the individuals that make this show possible. You can use the links in the show notes to do your own research. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and give us a rating on whatever platform you're listening from. We are our own wildest dreams, the hope of our own tomorrow. So until next time, keep